Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
I'm Brother Gregory, and this is Keys of the Kingdom, and we try to impart to you the keys to the kingdom. Peter doesn't have them. When Jesus said that he was going to give it unto him the keys of the kingdom, he immediately gave him the keys to the kingdom, at least in the most general of terms. It's like the Ten Commandments. Jesus summed it up into loving God and loving thy neighbor as thyself. And that if you're really doing that, you're going to be keeping the Ten Commandments. And because everything hinges upon those two perspectives or values. If you really love God, you're going to love your neighbor as yourself. So you really could break it down into love God with your whole heart, mind, and soul. So seeking the keys of the kingdom is what you bind on earth is bound in heaven. And what you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. And that's the keys to the kingdom. And what you bind on earth, it's like, you know, you get married, you honor your matrimonial agreement, you become a father, you honor that position as a father or as a mother, you honor that position, and you treat everybody in your life honorably, and you fulfill your obligations, and you love your neighbor as yourself, and you love your family, and you sacrifice for your family, and all these things are binding you on earth, and they're binding you in heaven. If you hate your neighbor, if you're cruel to your neighbor, if you rob your neighbor, you're creating bonds there as well. If you resent or judge others, you're going to create bonds that are going to be like Marley's chains, which I mentioned in this morning's program. So if you create institutions and you call them the church and you bind yourself emotionally, sometimes even by oaths and affirmations, by debt to that church, then you're binding yourself. But if you bind yourself with love and honor and charity and hope for return only, but don't create contractual. That was one of the first things in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt make no covenants with them, nor with their gods. And so how you bind yourself one to another, how you bind yourself to the kingdom of God and his righteousness is part of that keys of the kingdom. But you can also bind yourself to the world, the flesh, and the devil. And that's binding yourself in the other way. If you want to loose yourself from the world, the flesh, and the devil, you need to bind yourself to the spiritual principality of God, the spiritual kingdom of God, by turning around, thinking a different way, and beginning to put those thoughts, the thoughts according to the ways of Christ, into action. And so it is my contention that many of what is posing today as the church is not really the church. They have elements of the church. They have elements of Christ in them. But if you don't have the whole truth, you don't have the truth. And because that's the definition of a lie, is, you know, missing part of the truth. So you don't want to be missing any part of the truth. You want the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. So we're looking at this thing called home church, because a lot of people are leaving the church. By millions of people are leaving the church. And for all sorts of different reasons. And some of them, you know, whether you want to call them unchurch or home church or house church or what have you, some of them are gathering together in small groups. And that is the way the early church gathered, in small groups. But it wasn't just small groups. It was actually a large group of small groups. And we see the pattern that the early church took, and we wrote a book, Thy Kingdom Comes, and we go over in a number of the chapters that, the pattern, as well as other things. And the pattern, we see it in Mark 6, verse 39, that Jesus commanded that his apostles make the people sit down in the tens, hundreds, fifties, and thousands. And they actually, they say to make them sit down in companies and companies. And the word companies there is symposium and symposium. In other words, groups of 10 and groups of 10. In ranks, in other words, in patterns of 50s and in patterns of 100. In other words, there's 10 groups of 10, that's 100, and 50 groups of 100, that's 5,000. And that's what you had there at that time. They already said in the scriptures that there were 5,000 men and their families. So that's why that particular pattern. But the pattern of 10s, we see Moses doing the patterns of 10s. We see Jethro had done the patterns of 10s. You can actually go back even pre-Nimrod and you can find these patterns of 10. Like I say, the Teutons, the Jutes, the Issachs, they all had this pattern of 10s. Even in Great Britain, you had tithings, that was 10 men. And then they had hundreds of men and thousands of men, which was tens, hundreds, and thousands. And in Germany, we see the same pattern. In France, we see the same pattern. It was very, very common. Everybody knew about it. Even in the American Revolution, when they were riding out to warn the people that the British were coming, they were doing it through this network of tens, hundreds, and thousands, which was still being used in America. It's amazing that it's just been like deleted from your history books and call it conspiracy or whatever you. But the reality is that is the most common form of self-government throughout the history of man. And how it works is really very simple. It's all voluntary. We talked about this morning about organization. People don't like organized religion, organized church, and they all want to get away from that. But it's not that it's organized. It's that it's organized from the top down. And you got people bossing you around, telling you what to do, what to think, how to think, and regulating. I mean, I've actually seen small churches that in order for anybody to get married, they had to get approval. And my own great-great-great-grandfather was kicked out of the Quaker church because he married somebody else who had been kicked out of the Quaker church. Actually, no, I think it was the other way around. His father was kicked out of the Quaker church for, well, actually, we can go back a generation even before him, back in the American Revolution. His father was kicked out of his grandfather was kicked out of the Quaker church for joining the Virginia Regiment and helping George Washington during the American Revolution. He was later let back in, died on the missions. He had a son, and that son grew up. And I think it was his son who was kicked out of the Quaker church for smuggling slaves in the Underground Railroad. But then he joined the Schism Quakers, who said that that was okay. But then his son married a woman who was in the regular Quakers, and they were both kicked out because, you know, Schism Quakers weren't allowed to marry regular Quakers. So anyway, we weren't Quakers anymore. After that, we went on to other religions that didn't kick us out so quick. But of course, my Irish relatives who came from Ireland, of course, they were in Ireland because they'd gotten into trouble in England. And when they were in Ireland, they actually changed their name to Williams because they were cutting their heads off so fast because they were of the House of Boleyn. And nobody wanted, you know, it wasn't popular for a while there in England to be a Boleyn. I mean, at one time, everybody wanted to marry a Boleyn and wanted to be a part of the Boleyn house. But then all of a sudden they fell out under Henry VIII. And nobody wanted to be Boleyn. So there's a whole book written about Boleyn, now Williams. And that was our ancestors who were in County Kilkenny who changed their name over on our Irish side. Our Whitaker side had already been here in America since the early 1600s. We've been here for a long time. But anyway, the point is these are the different houses that we have come from down to this house. And now I'm in this House of Williams, and I'm the only Williams sons of my father who had children. So our family is the last of that line by the name of Williams. But again, like I say, if you go back in history, our name wasn't even Williams to begin with. We just took that on at a time. But it's the same bloodline. Somebody once asked, are you proud of now it's supposed to be bad that you're white, and so you're proud of your white heritage. Well, no, I didn't do any of that stuff back then, the good stuff or the bad stuff. You know, joining the Virginia Regiment. I didn't join the Virginia Regiment. My great-great-grandfather did. I'm not proud of that. Why would I be proud of that? I'm appreciative of that. I'm appreciative that they survived, that they raised their children, that they made it to America. I'm appreciative of all the things they did because I'm here now. So, yeah, but proud of it. I didn't do it. They did it. So why would I be proud of it? I'm also not ashamed of any of the bad things they might have done. So anyway, but this has all come down, and now I'm a part of I am the head of the House of Williams, at least in my lineage, because I'm the only one with offspring, and I have offspring that have offspring and great-grandchildren now. So that's we're of this house. But I'm also of the house of the Lord, because I've dedicated my life to preaching the gospel of the kingdom. And I've tried to do it in accordance to what Jesus commanded his appointed little flock to do. He gave them specific instructions. So you want to apply it. Most churches don't apply those instructions. And you could apply some of those instructions, but not others. You really have to do it with your whole heart, mind, and soul. So anyway, that's where we're at today. But the topic this morning was home churches, because we believe that home churches was the way in which the early church began the organization of the church. It's from the bottom up. Like I said, I talked about the organization comes from the word that has to do with organic, organized, to do things in an orderly fashion. And the early church clearly did things in an orderly fashion. And that order was dictated by Christ to some degree, but it would, because of the fact that the ministers were not to exercise authority one over the other, the people really were responsible for organizing themselves and conforming to what Christ wanted. And what Christ wanted was us to follow the way. And that's what Christianity was called. It wasn't called Christianity. Christians weren't called Christians until Antioch. Before that, they were just Jews, and they were following the way, and that was the way of the Christ, which means the way of the Messiah, the way of the King of Judea, and the King was Jesus, Yeshua. And so that's what they were doing, but what does that look like, and how would that transmit today? Yes, it would include home churches, because that's the way it operates. It operates like a home church. On the group of symposia, the companies, it's home churches and home churches, small groups. You know, about 10 families is all you're going to get in most houses, unless you got a really big house. I mean, I spoke in one house in the Carolinas, and it was a pretty big house when they took out all the partitions and everything. You could see a lot of people in there, more than 10 families, and it got crowded there when I was speaking. There a number of times. And so they're right about the home church, but there's a lot of other baggage that we pick up over the years. It really doesn't have anything to do with the first century church. Some of it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's just personal customs and traditions, you know. And you can do those things as long as they don't interfere with the true actions of the church, what the church is really supposed to be doing, what the followers of Christ are really supposed to be doing. We use that church word pretty generically now. It's just kind of, I mean, like do church. Well, you don't really do church. That's not what the original, the church is from the word ecclesia, which means called out, and you don't do called out, you know, but it's developed in our language, where we talk about doing church, and you ask people, what do you think it means to do church? Well, go to a building, say prayers, sing songs, talk about the Bible, listen to a sermon. That's doing church. Well, the early church didn't really do that. They were doing something else, and it was very important that they do it, because they would not have survived the same as my ancestors. If they hadn't have done everything they did, I wouldn't be here today because they would not have survived. But because they did survive, which I said I'm very appreciative of, here we are and we can do more things, and hopefully my children will survive, and I have to care about your children as much as I care about my children. And I know the best way to survive, whether it's good times or bad times, is that you sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands and call upon the Spirit of Christ, what Christ said to do, in order to survive the days ahead, whatever they happen. I personally think that there will be some very bad things that happen in the days ahead. And I can say that because I've looked back in the past and I've saw every so often very bad things happen. So they're likely to happen again. And sometimes they'll be localized. Bad things will happen over here, like the fire in paradise. And then, you know, people that where bad things are not happening can send aid to paradise and help them out. By the same token, when there's fire and weed, or when there's a snowstorm in North Dakota, that you can send aid. Well, there's all kinds of aid. People get sick, and there are things that can help you. Most of the people I know out there in the community, when they get sick, they go to doctors, they get surgery, they run up medical bills of hundreds of thousands of dollars, some of which is paid for by the government, but some of it's paid for by them. And personally, I see a lot of the stuff that they do doesn't really help. There are other things that can help you heal that the medical society doesn't know about. And like my son just had the tip of his finger knocked off in an accident involving lumber and a conveyor belt. Somebody turned it on and ended up getting his finger caught, and eventually got it loose, but it took off the tip of his finger. And the doctor looking at it says that he is amazed at how fast it's been healing. And so he's still got the bandage on. I seen the injury originally, but it's healing really fast. I myself was in an automobile accident, which was really important in my life. It set off a chain of events that has brought me and my entire family to this point. I survived the accident. Everybody survived the accident, but I was probably hurt the worst. I had a car roll over on top of me. And my injuries were supposed to be extensive, you know, and I was supposed to have skin grafts and all this stuff. You know, 4-inch cross burns, third degree burns, completely healed up. You can't even see a scar. And they were healed up completely. They're still very sensitive to pain at first, but they were healed up completely within a week. And I mean, the skin was completely gone and the muscle was cooked. There were bones broken that healed back. In a month, I was hauling pulpwood out of the forest, lifting it by hand, and loading it on a tray. So yeah, you can heal remarkably fast. And the doctors cannot figure out how that is. And I tell you, it's the Holy Spirit. You shouldn't believe it because I say it, but I'm saying that there's more dreamt of in modern science than they realize. You can't conjure that spirit up, but you can conform to Christ and do what Christ said. And so they're right. Home church is the way it goes. And I'm creating a webpage that goes through about everything you can think of concerning home church, and how people talk about home church and how they organize home church. But what a lot of people are doing by mistake, in order to justify, maybe justify the guilt or alleviate the guilt they feel from leaving the church because they were kind of addicted to going to church, and they were bound up in this idea of going to church and modern corporate churchianity. And so, but they knew something was wrong, and so they go to home church, and they want to justify going to home church. And so they take quotes out of the Bible, and they try to prove that, yeah, this is what they were talking about along, is home church, house church. And the problem is that some of the quotes they're taking out have nothing to do with house church or home church. The one word, oikios, that word means house, And it appears about 100 times, but then they take certain quotes out and they read these quotes and they say, well, see, they're talking about home church here. Out of 100 quotes, they come up with like 4, maybe 5. And the quotes really don't apply if you understand the definition of the word church, which doesn't mean assembly. And we'll keep going back to that, and we'll eventually cover what it means. We have articles up already that show you the word called out does not mean assembly. There's half a dozen other Greek words that mean assembly, and we'll go over those. But one of the quotes that they, you know, I already went over 1 Timothy 3:15, and it talks about the house of God, and some translations say the God's household. That's not really correct. House of God is a better translation. But the house of God has nothing to do with your house necessarily. It may include you and your family, because it doesn't really have anything to do with the building. Although most of the time that you see that phrase in the New Testament, they're talking about the tabernacle being the house of God. Now, the tabernacle was a tent. It wasn't a big stone building or anything. And it moved around. And it moved around because the Levites moved around. And the Levites were a part of the house of God. Because you have to remember, the Levites were called out. They had no personal inheritance. Everybody else had homes that they inherited and passed down from family to family. The Levites had land, but they owned it all in common. They didn't have it as a personal estate. And very clear, the Levites belonged to God. And so they were a brotherhood that belonged to God. They were exempt from certain things, but they were required to do certain things. They did not receive your tithing just because they were Levites. They received their tithing according to their service. And what was their service? To serve the tents of the congregation. That's what it says over and over again, although they often translate it tabernacles of the congregation. The word tabernacles just means tents. And all those Levites weren't taking care of this one tent. These Levites are, all the Levite lands were near where everybody else was. There was almost a Levite household in every little village somewhere. And they owned lands. They owned lands in common that they could run sheep on or livestock and everything. And if you gave them sheep, they could run them on that. But the idea was they were taking care of most of the social welfare of the people. And they received the sacrifices of the people, and they turned around and provided for the needs of the people. Therefore, they had to be in constant communication with the people to know who needed what. And they were in constant communication because they were sitting down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands. And those Levites were connecting all these small villages and communities and these it's sometimes called tithings, but these little synagogues, a group of 10 men, they were providing a way in which to connect them with all the other little groups throughout the whole nation of Israel, so that they were attacked overnight. People could come to their aid. If they had a famine, they had a way of coming to their aid. If they had fire, they had a way of coming to their aid. If they had, problems. I mean, it was health, education, welfare, farming, agricultural extension service, everything ran through the Levites. If you were having a disease problem with your sheep, they would come up with a solution. And that's the way they operated as a society. Now, that all went into decay, and, a couple generations before Christ, there was a huge bugarump that killed off huge amounts of the Levites. So that they actually, the records say that there wasn't even anybody to say grace in the palace of the king, that he killed so many because he wasn't very popular. That would be John Hyrcanus. And when he came into Jerusalem, and you're supposed to greet him with palm branches, which is why they greet Jesus with palm branches, because Jesus was the king, they did not wave them at him. They hit him with them because they were so disgusted with his Greek approach to things and some of the other things that had been going on at that time. And so he got very angry and had lots of them put to death to kind of end the opposition, so to speak. But anyway, that was his house. Now comes along Jesus, and he comes into Jerusalem, and he's accepted. And that's why, you know, when I point out that the word oikos can mean the family of God, it can mean a person forming one family, all the people forming one family, or the family of God. You know, it could also mean all the descendants from a particular individual. But it can also mean the house of Israel, and even the house of the king, or the house of God. It's the same word that you see over and over again. Everywhere you see this word house, it's not the same word. And that's what we're going to be looking at. This particular word is used 100 times. And then sometimes they add another word to it to change the meaning or to create a new meaning. But sometimes they have a word that doesn't mean house at all, and it's translated house. And some of those are used by people trying to justify home church, and they use it incorrectly. They don't really need to use that, but the problem is when they use those verses, then they miss what those verses are really about, and they miss it because somebody took a word that means healing and translated it house or household, and you miss it. So we're going to look at some of those things. In 1 Corinthians 16:19, the phrase is, "The churches of Asia salute you. Aquila and Priscilla salute you much in the Lord with the church that is in their house." Now, if you look at the Greek there, it's very interesting. But one of the things most people don't know is that Aquila and Priscilla, by tradition, have always been believed to have been part of the 120 in the upper room. They have a couple of lists of who they thought were in the upper room. They even have some of these quotes that use the reference to the upper room as evidence of house church because they're in the upper room. That's 120 names in the upper room, and probably their families were there as well. You have to remember, Christians were under a great deal of suspicion and threat. You might not want to leave your family at home when you go to these meetings. Then again, some of them might leave their family at home in safer places because there was a danger involved. There was a danger before Jesus went to Jerusalem. And we see Peter warning Jesus. There was a danger ever since the father of John the Baptist was murdered in the temple. And John the Baptist ended up out in the desert and away from the government because something else was going on in Jerusalem. There's often, you have this problem, I was just talking to somebody from Sweden today, and they say that they were actually talking about Switzerland. And Switzerland, you know, that's a direct democracy, but it's pretty much ruled by the people in the cities who all vote one way. People in the country would vote another way, but they're in such a minority. Why do the people in the cities vote one way and the people in the country vote another? Because where you live begins to change the way you think. And of course, that's the definition of the word repentance, as changing the way you think. So how you organize your home church, what your home church is doing, that's where you live. It's not just, we're not talking about your home, but your home church is now your house or the neighbor's house or wherever you're meeting. If it's a house, I mean, you could meet in other places. It doesn't have to be in a house. But when you meet together in that free assembly, that's your home church. That's your house church. It's your house gathering. And now that environment will change the way you see the world if you're doing all the things that you're supposed to be doing when you gather in those tens, hundreds, and thousands. And that's what a lot of home churches are missing because they're not being taught. I think many people would accept this, and the more they accepted it, the more they acted upon it, the more they would see the value in it. But they haven't been taught it. Information has been kept from them. It's in the text. It helps you put the pieces of the puzzle together when you understand it, but you have to actually take a deeper look at things, and it's difficult when they translate one Greek word several different ways or several different Greek words into the same English word. it begins to distort our view of what's going on. And also, if you don't know the history, you don't know what's actually happening on a day-to-day basis, you don't know how some of these phrases were have meaning. We see in Romans 16:3-5, greet Priscilla and Aquila, my helpers in Christ Jesus, who have for my life laid down their own necks, unto whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. Likewise, greet the church that is in their house. Salute my well-beloved Ephesus, who is the first fruits of Arcadia unto Christ. Now, again, when they're talking about house, it's the same as the house of Israel or the house of, Aquila and Priscilla were big organizers from the beginning. They had money. They had a tent business. I mean, a pretty good sized tent business. The same way with Paul was extremely rich, and he came from Tarsus, which was kind of the tent capital of the Roman Empire. They made lots of tents there. He knew how to, they didn't just sit there and weave one tent. It takes them a couple of weeks. They had lots of people working for them and employed, weaving the cloth and processing the goat hair and the wool and whatever they were using as their rough material, felting it together and making these tents, which were essential for life and death a lot of times, especially when they started kicking Christians out of the Rome, and Christians had to flee when there were dearths, and later on when there were invasions, these tents came in real handy. We make tents here as well. At least some of us do. I don't do as much. I started doing it, but I've been pretty busy with this. The tents they make here mostly are yurts. They have sold some teepees and things like that, but they make yurts. But Priscilla and Aquila were risking their necks by helping the Christians, by making these tents and making them available, especially when 14,000 people were kicked out of Rome and they had to just leave Rome. Well, you could die before you got somewhere else. And so those tents came in very handy, I'm sure. They didn't build any buildings as far as Christians. The only first buildings that I know of that they built for Christians was where they buried them, which was after Nero's persecution. There were nieces of Paul who gathered up bodies and washed those bodies and buried them it's not really a mausoleum, but just they built a little structure over the top, but there was a structure built over the top to mark the spot. And they got in a lot of trouble for that eventually, but the reality is that's the only building that I know of that Christians were building specifically in commemoration of their dead. And of course, we know that the Christians often had to meet in secrets, and they met in the catacombs, which is where they put bodies and stuff like that. And there's a lot more to that, but we won't go on to that. In Philemon 1, verse 2, and to our beloved Apphia and Archippus, our fellow soldiers, and to the church in thy house. Again, when they talk about the church in thy house, I'm the house of Williams, but I'm in an order with other ministers, and that's our family too. That would be considered our house as the word is used. That order is the house at Summer Lake, which is the ministers that come and are stationed out of here and go out and do other things, but they're part of this house of Summer Lake, this congregation at Summer Lake. Colossians says in Colossians 4:15, salute thy brethren which are in Laodicea and Nymphas, and the church which is in his house. Well, again, any kind of a group of people, especially if they're bound together as a brotherhood, that would be considered a house. They're interpreting this to mean house churches. But if Aquila and Priscilla were a part of the 120, they weren't just folks. And they didn't just have a house, but they were a part of the appointment of Jesus Christ. There was very clearly, Jesus called out a group of people who he called the little flock, took the kingdom away from Jesus, the people who were in Judea at that time, sitting in the seat of Moses, and appointed that kingdom to his little flock, who became what we call the church, which is really the called out. And they were kept separate from the world in order to serve the people who were to gather in their home churches. But what were they doing? And again, back to this word ecclesia, it doesn't mean assembly. It doesn't even mean congregation. There are other words that we can use for that, and we'll go over those. But let's go take a look at this word household. There are several words in the New Testament translated household. One of the first appearances is when Jesus warns us in Matthew 10:25 and Matthew 10:36, and he uses that the word there that is translated into household, which is, it is enough for the disciples that he be as his master and the servant as his Lord, if they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? The household of Beelzebub. It's not home church. They're talking about all those who follow Beelzebub. And they're saying that Christ is Beelzebub, so all the followers of Christ are of the household of Beelzebub, in their opinion. But of course, Christ is not of Beelzebub, but those who follow the ways of Christ could easily be considered part of the household of Christ. And the apostles are the ones who followed him. The 70 followed him. And the 120 in the upper room evidently followed him and were blessed by that. And they all went out and preached the kingdom. They were all baptizing people into the kingdom. 20,000 one day, 30,000, or 2,000 one day, 3,000 the next day. But again, those numbers are probably, as is the custom, only referring to the heads of households. So it was actually 2,000 heads of households, which could represent easy 5,000, 10,000, 12,000 people. And so when you had 3,000, it could be 15,000, 20,000. So we're talking a sizable portion in a town that only had about 100,000 normally. Now, I'll admit, at Pentecost, the numbers in Jerusalem were probably swollen with people from all over, which is why Christianity spread so fast, one of the reasons, is those people were baptized, and then they went back to Galatia, Corinth, and all the other places that they went. Which is why, right out of the box, we see Paul and Barnabas having to go all across the Roman Empire to deliver funds and supplies to people who fell upon need. But all those who followed Christ would be considered of the household of Christ, the same as all those who followed any of these individuals would, if they followed Beelzebub, they would be of the household of Beelzebub. It has nothing to do with house church. So, also we see this phrase, household of God, where the adjective of oikios, which is oikeios in the English, is used in Ephesians 2:19. And the term is described as someone who is seen as belonging to a house or a family. So it's not, again, a house. It's somebody who belongs to a house or a family. And again, like I say, that household or family could be the king's family, the household of Israel, the household of Jesus Christ, whatever. And so none of this is saying, these phrases are talking about creating house church. But there was house church. There were people meeting in homes, but they were meeting in homes because of the tens, hundreds, and thousands. And because that's what Christ required as ministers, that the people had to organize in that way. Otherwise, there would be no way they could rightly divide the bread from house to house. They couldn't find people. They wouldn't know, who do we see in Corinth? Who do we turn these foods for the famine victims over to? How do we organize this so we know who needs what and who should get what first and who has the greatest need? They had to be very efficient about that. They didn't have cell phones and they didn't have apps and all these kinds of things to stay in communication. They had to know where they were going, who they were going to meet up with before they got there. They did have some letter writing, but that took a lot of time. It was probably about as good as the U.S. Post Office is today, but it wasn't entirely, you didn't get your mail in a couple days. Sometimes we don't get mail for a week after it's sent. I just mailed a letter to the town directly below us. The mail truck has to go to that town. That's where it starts from, and it comes out of there. But my letter is not going to go to that town and be given to somebody who lives in that town. It's going to go way over to Medford, be sorted, come from Medford all the way back to Lakeview, and then go to that guy. So, I thought, well, you might get it tomorrow, but no, that's not going to happen. Well, in those days when they mailed letters, and there was letters being mailed back and forth from Great Britain to Italy, from Italy to Corinth, to Ephesus, they had a way of delivering letters. And Paul, because of the wealth of his family, and they were in commerce and business, making tents for, probably over 100 years, they were very familiar with how to get letters and information around, how to deliver goods and get them around. And Paul, being Romeos, not a Roman citizen, but Romeos, being whole, that's what Romeos means, in possession of his rights, sui juris in the Latin, he had access to a lot of things that the average guy on the street wouldn't have. So he was a godsend. And of course, that's exactly what he was a godsend. So anyway, finally we see the phrase house or household of faith mentioned in Galatians. And that's really kind of an important quote. It says in Galatians 6:10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. So we're supposed to love our neighbors, even love our enemies. We're supposed to do good to all men, but especially to the household of faith. What's the household of faith? That's those people living by faith instead of living by force. You have to remember, before John the Baptist, most every government of the known world, at least of the Roman Empire and even beyond to some degree, some more than others, took care of the welfare of the people through taxation. That's using force. You force the offerings of the people and the sacrifice of the people, and then the government provides free bread. Augustus was doing it. Tiberius did it. Claudius did it. All these emperors were doing it. They were doing it in other countries, and of course the local governors were doing it. That is force. To live by faith means that you only get benefits by way of charity. See, government's never in the charity business. Government's in the force business. It may give you stuff for free, supposedly, although I don't think it ever gives anything away for free. There's always some string attached. But what they give, they have simply taken away from others. What the church gave, what Paul was taking there when there was these dearths in the land, those were free will contributions. And this was the difference between the Corban of Christ and the Corban of the Pharisees. The Corban of the Pharisees was now collected by force. John the Baptist said, no, do it by charity. Jesus said, no, do it by charity. Paul said, do it by charity. Peter said to do it by charity. And he says, if you do it by force, through covetous practices, through men who can exercise authority, you'll be made merchandise and you'll curse your children. That's all in the text. And we show this over and over again. There's lots of live links on the page that I'm creating at Preparing You on Home Church. And we're going to add a lot more because I've been reading more and more people who are advocating home church. Some of them have been preachers in big churches, but they're trying to make the church more personal and more responsive on an individual fellowship basis. And that's a great idea. But you can't lose sight of the kingdom, because Jesus didn't say, seek ye first the home church of your choice and feel good about it. He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and the righteousness of God and be expected to be persecuted for it. So anyway, that's pretty much where we're going and in this process to understand how the home church works and doesn't work. I never did take a break. I need to take a quick break, even though it's way off time. And then we'll be back to Keys of the Kingdom in a moment. So stay tuned. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. So what's the other word that shows up in the biblical text that is translated household and might be mistaken for house or household? It's a Greek word that has nothing, there's actually a couple more that we'll look at later. We probably won't have time today. But one of them actually means house of the despots. That's what it says, oikos despotos. But that's actually in reference to Jesus Christ. But anyway, this word is therapeia. And at least, you know, you can see it as a verb or as a noun. And it's in a different form then. But it means service rendered by one to another. And it's found in Matthew 24:45, Luke 9:11, Luke 12:42, and in Revelation 2:22:2. But it doesn't mean house, but it's translated household in these different verses. So what does it mean? What actually are they talking about? And the definition goes on to further say, not only is it services rendered by one to another, that's what it is. That's what the word, and of course, that's where we get the word therapy. And, you know, there's physical therapy, mental therapy, there's all kinds of therapy. But that's a service rendered one to another. So if you want to use that to prove that there's house church, because it says household there, no, it's about service. And to tell you the truth, it's about church service. It goes on to describe medical service, curing, healing, not only of individuals, but of a nation, healing of a nation. Or it can refer to a body of attendants or servants. Well, of course, we all should serve one another, but it's very clear that Jesus called out servants, called out ministers, to feed his sheep. That would make them servants of the house of Jesus Christ, serving each of your homes. That, because you, just like Israel, everybody had an inheritance. All your inheritance was passed down freely from one generation to the next. And if you did that right, and you stayed married, and you took care of your family, and your children took care of you when you're old, that would be somebody who is righteous in their generations. And that's what you should be doing. Many people are now older and they haven't been as righteous in their generations for one reason or another. And their families are all broken apart. And maybe not entirely through their fault. Usually fault is not divided up like pie. You're 100% responsible for what you've done. And your spouse is 100% responsible for what they've done. And as your children grow up, they're going to eventually be held responsible for what they've done. But nobody's been given as much help as they probably need. And nobody has been told the truth. And if we had caught a lot of people early on and showed them the kingdom is based on this foundation of the family and how important the family is, but there had been thousands of people over hundreds of years undermining the role of the family in the kingdom of God and in the church. Because the church is self-organized from that organic bottom up, and nothing more organic than a family. And those family come together in free assemblies, not corporations or anything like that. And they are bound together by those ministers of the church that are called out to help the people bind each other together with love. Not with contracts, constitutions, or covenants, but with love and honor and compassion. And an active, empathetic spirit living and dwelling in them. And then they won't become trolls. They won't become suicidal. They won't become depressed and anxious. They won't become treacherous people. But people haven't gone that way. And so the world's getting to be kind of a scary, messed up place. So this therapeia, it can mean a body of attendants and servants. So if we go down and look at some of the places that it was used, which is probably all we're going to have time to get to. Like I said, Matthew 24:45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over the household, to give them meat in due season. That word ruler in there, I didn't look up that one, but in Luke 12:42, we see a similar quote. And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward? And that word, steward, is oikonomos. And that's two words, oiko, meaning house, and nomos, meaning law. So a steward is house law. That's how they get the word steward. Well, there's a reason for that, and we'll look at that. Whom his Lord shall make ruler. Again, we see that word ruler. But the problem is, these words ruler that you're seeing here is not the word arche, which normally means ruler in the Greek. It's a word that really should not be translated ruler. And most of the time, it's not translated ruler. It's very seldom translated ruler. It's more often translated make. It's actually best translated ordained. Shall make ordained over his household to give them their portion of meat in due season. Again, that's what we see up there in Matthew 24:45, but this is in Luke 12:42. So what they're talking about is ordained ministers of the household of God, rightly dividing the bread. The word there, portion of meat, that's actually the word for grain, measure of grain. It's two words, meaning measure of grain, in due season, when it's needed, to the house. It's rightly dividing the bread from house to house. And the stewards, okinomos, are the house of God, rightly dividing the bread from house to house, freely giving what was freely given to them. That's not like other governments. What they give out is not freely given. Doing it this way can only be done this way when you think differently. And that thinking differently we call repentance. And this is what John the Baptist was saying. You have two coats and your neighbor has none? Share. Charity. Do the same in meats. What meats? Portion of meats, those portion of grain, bread, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be. My son just left with a truckload of potatoes. He sorted them all out in different bags, and they're taking it down to a food kitchen in Christmas Valley, or up to a food kitchen in Christmas Valley, and sharing it. And it was, you know, hundreds of pounds of potatoes that we grew extra over the hundreds of pounds that we grew for ourselves. And we've already given away a bunch, and we're going to be giving away more and more. We can't hardly walk in the root cellar. But we're giving them away, and we're trying to give it to people who need it. We try to give some to the people that were from the fire that made it up to Lake County, and they got it put in homes. We're working on a lot of other projects, but we'll see how they all pan out. But this was absolutely essential that you had a called out group that were dedicating their lives to rightly dividing the bread from house to house, to in due season. When things were needed, there was a way to get it there. And they didn't take it out of a central treasury. They took it to this network of symposia, the network of small home church congregations. And they were in communication with them. And they said, you know, the minister of my minister tells me that there's need for food in Northlake County, or there's need for food in Paradise, or wherever there's been a disaster, and they need clothes, and people took clothes there. And so that's what you do. And what we're doing is creating a network of people who will actually get involved. They're not all sitting down in congregations. It's what we call the extended network, but they're doing this. And the stewards, the oikonomos, and that's where you really need to take a look. You know, when Paul's supposedly doing away with the law, says the law was being done away with, what law is he talking about? And again, I pointed this out this morning, that the law that he was talking about was not the Ten Commandments. It was what the Pharisees had turned the law into. The Greek word for nomos, law, doesn't mean what most people think it means. It has to do with what's right. and what's fair. And there's a lot more to it, but we'll have to do that next time on Keys to the Kingdom. So until then, all I can say is peace upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.